Angelique and Jeff, why don't you tell us how Playing Mars got started?
We were both in a band called CIAM, C-I-A-M, and we played together for like 3 years. And at one point we did one album with that band, and we then felt we started a new writing process. And it kind of got to a point where it was continuing what we did, but diverting from it at the same time. There was like a stronger electronic element as well. And we also, in a way, felt that we were a good team together, better than working with other people. So it felt like, let's get started again. You know, let's get something new started here. Let's move on. It felt like the right sort of time.
And also, after about 4 years of working together, we really understood each other as people, as well as musicians. So,
it was all just right.
Now, do you think that knowing each other for a specific length of time is more important to the music than if you were to just like answer an ad somewhere and join a band?
Yes and no. I think that we instantly got on really well when we first started working together. We got on, you know, like day one, we got on really well. But when you take that and you add it to the also to the time factor and, you know, like being good friends and doing a few things together, that adds to that instant sort of thing that you're talking about. You know, things can happen. I mean, but people can work together or jam together or whatever instantly sometimes, and it's happened to me. But to actually have a good partner for a long time is a lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Well, with the lineup of Playing Mars, I mean, Angelique, you play an electric cello and you do vocals. And then Jeff, you play guitar and do vocals. How did that initial trial period, I guess you could say, when you guys first started, pan out to where you found your sound? Because that's an eclectic lineup.
A lot of studio work, a lot of like trying things, and you know, us two working with it, either an engineer or another musician, or there's people who come in, do sessions with us once in a while, friends. But it's mostly us two, and like now an engineer, he'll program some drums and we'll play bass, guitar, cellos. Angelique's always, you know, you've always been a cellist, electric cellist.
And it's experimenting with different amps, with different pedals.
Sounds.
Different sounds, yeah. It's just trial and error. You find what works and you keep it and you develop it.
Yeah.
Now, with some of your influences being the Velvet Underground, The Cure, Sigur Rós, and so on and so forth, I noticed that you incorporate a lot of video and film into your art, and a lot of them did too, especially like the Velvet Underground, you know, with the collaborations with Andy Warhol. How do you feel the sight versus the sound combines to create the art form?
It's an exciting thing, you know. It's like you get excited by both, and I think the sound sometimes is inviting the sight, the visual, and sometimes you watch a visual and you get a sound in your head. It's both, and it both makes it a wider sort of screen. You know, the music, I don't think music is just music. I think that even when there isn't a film, people imagine visual stuff. So now if you're really more focused on the visual thing, then you're able to take it to a more focused place, I think. And we're working with some good people who are into visuals. We're working with people who are into making short films and stuff, and are an architect, and people who are into design and so on. So, and we're into urban stuff, very sort of urban design, very strong city kind of visuals, and it suits our music, and it's the right sort of environment. So we're looking to do something that's more than music. It's more about us. It's about where we live and who we are and what we wear and the music we like and the art, the kind of art that we're interested in, and so on and so forth. So the visual and the music are almost, you know, they're almost an equal part of each other.
I'm sorry, were you going to finish?
No, sorry.
That's okay. Now, how does your music play into some of the documentaries you've been on? Were they inspired by the documentaries, or was the music picked because it fit the documentary?
Sorry, I'm not sure we understood that.
Your music's going to be featured on some documentaries, correct?
People seem to like what we were doing. I don't think that one had anything to do with us.
Oh, okay. You know,
yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. How does your songwriting process happen with the two of you being as original as you are musically?
A lot of our songwriting is actually through improvisation, and whether that's studio or just casually hanging out. At home we have rep sessions where we just improvise, and that comes through knowing each other and our, you know,
we give each other a lot of space. You see, we one of us would start something, and the other will pick and take it from there to another place, and so on. And we manage to collaborate in that way because we listen to each other, and we're not competing in that way. You know, we're kind of understanding each other quite well. Sometimes one of us will come up with an idea that was there before, and the other will take it forward. There's a lot of collaboration, and the songs are made out of sometimes they're straightforward songs, and sometimes they're like a jam. We'll have lines, or we'll bring in, and we'll collaborate on those lines, and then we'll add sounds to those lines, and until we feel that we've got a starting point, and then we'll develop it over. Sometimes fairly quickly, you know, like in one session, and sometimes, you know, some days or weeks.
Now, what is your live show like? I mean, what can we expect when we go to a Playing Mars show?
It's a really good question. We're not entirely sure yet, is the truth. There are some elements that we are sure about. Yeah, there's going to be a strong electronic element. There's going to be some screens on the stage with some, you know, hopefully visuals that people like that work really well with the music, and different kind of messages. There's going to be various musicians playing with us on stage. So the stage is going to be sometimes really minimal, and it'll come down to just Angelique, myself, and another person doing the electronic stuff. And it will also expand to having, like, you know, six people on stage or more. We're thinking of, you know, kind of changing it, not being just fixed on one thing. Yeah.
Now that's what I was gonna bring up with the live show, because you guys have a lot of visual online. Visual would your show be live?
Very visual. I think the color world that come across in the visuals, I think, really matches the sound world that we're creating. When we write music, we both think very strongly in colors. So I think, you know, putting those two things together on stage is very important.
And we've got two or three other people that we meet up with regularly to discuss visual side. So we have, like, team meetings where we'll play everyone our latest stuff, and we'll discuss visuals, and people in that group will come up with visuals, and we'll all kind of, you know, discuss it and so on. And so it's like a process on, you know, both ends.
Now, with the visuals being just as important in as the music in some places, how does that fit? I mean, well, how do you represent that online?
online. We've got a new website. It's not completed yet, but you will fairly soon see quite a lot of films and lots of artwork and some ideas for installations and things in time, kind of building up. So that will be a strong component. It's just a question of time, because we just completed the new website, and then it's going to take us a bit of time to kind of put everything together.
And the website looks gorgeous. I mean, you're talking about playingmoves.com. I mean, it is a good representation of your music. I mean,
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hey, not a problem. How do you use the internet and social media to promote your music and get it out there to the masses?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And we're just at a starting point now. We're working with some people who are helping us promote it online. So hopefully, especially in the UK, there's certain things that will kind of fall into place. So the online people hearing the radio and so on, and the radio will bring people back to going online and looking for us and seeing our website that will continue to develop and so on and so forth. So, but you know, we have a process that we started now that we believe will carry on for several months, if not at least the next year, in releasing both visuals and songs continuously, and promoting the online via stuff that everyone knows: Facebook, of course, Twitter, etc. We'll get into YouTube very soon with some new videos, promotional videos, Vimeo. And so on and so forth. We'll make sure that we have a presence wherever we can, and we have a PR company that we teamed up with to help us do the online and stuff. They're called Quite Great.
Now, here's where your opinions really come into play. With everything being online nowadays, what are your views on things like file sharing?
It's obviously a great thing to have, because gets things a lot quicker to people, a lot faster.
Well, what about like file sharing versus like buying the music?
Do you mean file sharing like free? So. It's sort of inevitable, sadly. But of course, we strongly believe in buying the music of people that you're into.
But you know what? I mean, here's the thing. You know, I think that, you know, the music, so-called music industry, has killed its own sort of golden egg by having all these formats for so many years and sold everybody their sort of back catalog again and again. And now we're at the place in a place where things can be free. I actually think that file sharing is great, because if you're trying to promote an idea, inevitably, if people like what you're doing, they'll buy into it, whether it's the live show or whether it's something special that you put out or whatever. It gives you an opportunity. There is a different way of looking at this and going, oh, because everything is for nothing, then nobody wants to pay anything for anything anymore. I don't believe that that's the case at all. I believe that when there's something special, people are willing to pay for it. So, yes, it's a free-for-all market. It's really, really tough in some ways to get noticed. But, you know, you got to believe in two things. One is that you've got something unique to say. You've got something to say that you want to say, that's important for you to say. And two, you got to work hard.
It's kind of like a catch-22, isn't it? Because on the one hand, it's an extra way to get your music out there. It's like a completely separate way than iTunes or Google Play or Amazon, so on and so forth. But then on the flip side,
As an artist, though, you hardly ever see the money from these guys.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. You're like the last one in line to get paid.
Yeah. So what, unless you're really big anyway, It doesn't really make much difference. I'll go back to bands that, you know, it now looks like a few years ago, but say Radiohead did this thing where they said, oh, pay us whatever you like for this album. You know, and people paid and they made money out of it. Of course they are Radiohead, of course. But I think that when there's something special, it takes some hard work, but maybe this is meant to be in this way. Maybe, as I was saying before, I think the music so-called industry killed it because they were looking after themselves. People became really greedy. And the music has now become, you know, in terms of if this was a share, a market share, it's now gone down to nothing. But when something goes down to nothing, it can only go up. It's a good thing. You know, people have to work hard to get somewhere.
Well, and also, if you remember, the music industry for the longest time blew it off. It wasn't until Napster came along that they actually did something about it. And they've always been like this, because if you remember, 10 years before that, they blew off double cassette players. Right. You know, until that became an issue, and then CD burning technology, they blew that off until that got big. So they kind of create their own problem because they don't either jump on the bandwagon or deal with the issue before it gets big.
I'll be honest with you, we're really not concerned with that issue in a way, because it can go either way. You either become massive, where, you know, lots of people want something that you have, and in which case you can sell it and you can actually make the money, or you can become really eclectic. And, you know, it's like small groups of people who have similar tastes will go for your stuff. I don't think it really matters, you know. A lot of stuff in life is down to hard work and some luck, of course, involved. And you just have to do your best, whatever you're doing. It's not like, oh, a get-rich plan, you know. It's not about karaoke. It's not about... It's for us, for Angelique and myself, it's about something real. It's about music. We've been doing it since we were 5 years of age. We're not looking to do something else with that. So,
Now, do you think that the days of the major label are over? Because...
Yes, completely.
Exactly. Well, I mean, because I'm seeing more and more indie artists make it big.
Yeah, of course. I mean, who cares about who the labels are anyway these days? It's good, and you know, good riddance, really.
Well, and most of the work that they would have done, I mean, the indie artists can do themselves on the computer.
Completely. I don't think labels are investing in the right way in people, because they're afraid anyway, and they think everything's for free and their investment goes nowhere. It's a good thing. I mean, look, it's separated the world into the real thing, into the fake thing. I think the real music is out there. You can find it if you really want. There's some good new stuff all the time, I think. There's some really good stuff. And there's a lot of rubbish that's always been rubbish and continues to be rubbish. You just choose what you want, where you want to be. Really, I mean, it's not about labels anymore. That's a wonderful thing. Yes, of course, we're interested in music for films. That is, you know, that's very, very exciting and very interesting. More so than the so-called music industry, because I think the film industry generates and is a real industry as opposed to music.
And the film industry has generated more publicity for the music industry than even the music industry at times.
Yeah, for sure. But that gives more support for the argument for strong visuals and what it's all about, and what people are interested in, and people's lifestyles, and what they want to be part of, etc. I think there's a diversion being created. If people start talking about being signed or labels and so on and so forth, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Now, this day and age. Do you think people... in this day and age, indie artists that, because we do have a lot, I do know of a lot of indie bands that is their end goal, but do you think that that's their end goal because of the prestige that it used to have?
I can't see why. And, you know, there's a lot, music attracts a lot of people who want somebody else to look after them. It's like, you know, in England we have football. Soccer, football, and footballers earn a ton of money If you ever follow any of that, then people earn a lot of money out of football in the UK. And music used to be like that, probably in the 60s and 70s at least. All these pop stars, rock stars used to, you know, drive the best cars and have big castles and so on. I think that's long gone. But it's like talking about real art. It's like, okay, if there's a gallery that, you know, artists, painters, you know, people dealing with art, etc., creating art, rather, sorry. It's not an industry as such. Yes, there's an art world, of course, there are traders, but there are artists, and the artists work in their studios. And if somebody discovers them and invests in them and so on, it's not a major label, is it?
No.
A lot of people need to belong to something. I don't know. Maybe that's what it's about for a lot of people. Play Mars is what wants to be unique, wants to do our thing, and we're very passionate about it. We don't really care about those tags. Mm-hmm.
I always assume that there's two types of bands that want to be signed, and that's the type that don't want to do the publicity or don't want to do the legwork, and they think that the label's going to do it for them.
Or someone's going to do it for them.
Yeah. They're the bands that still to this day wonder why they don't have a verified badge next to their Twitter handle.
You know? Maybe.
You know?
Maybe so.
Exactly. So, having said that, where do you think, what's playing Mars' attitude on the prestige factor? I mean, do you think that bands lose street cred when they go that route, or do you think that helps bring new listeners to their craft?
It makes no difference. There's probably a stage where it's like probably any other business. If you start something and it's really good and you need to turn your, it becomes a business and you probably then need investment. And if it comes with people who have the expertise, you know, at that point, that's wonderful. As a rule, it doesn't really matter to us how you do things. You gotta do what you gotta do. It's like if you look, sounding perhaps too naive in a way, but you go back to blues players, and like the really classic blues players were people who just picked the guitar. That's all they could do. That's all they wanted to do. Very naive, especially in today's world. But I think it's really back to basics on things. You know, I'd like my audience to be the kind of audience that is educated and interested in music, and they're not going to tag me as being on this or that label or anything else. It's got to be down to preferences and taste and passion and love.
Yeah. Well, do you think that in this day and age that audiences are wising up? Because I remember even back in the 90s and the first half of this century, a lot of, if you remember like the boy bands and everything, like those are assembly line artists, you know, that are created by the labels. But the labels for 50, 60, 70 years had a grip on the general audience and could basically tell them what to listen to. Do you think those days are over now?
No, I think that will always exist. There is an industry, like in the all those TV shows help that continue. You know, all those sort of America, what do you call it? You've got like
talent shows.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you said the 90s. That's when it was new, and that's when it really had an impact. I think now it's losing its impact. You know, the artists aren't around as long. They're not managing to keep going as long, or generally
unless
speaking.
Unless they're serious artists.
Yeah, you could probably count on one hand how many, you know, prefab artists have come from, you know, American Idol and The Voice and
American
the X
Idol,
Factor, you know, so on and so forth.
Exactly. That's the industry, really. You know, them, you know, using music to sell advertising. The people go on are interested in sort of reality TV and in being famous, and they're just being used.
Now, would you if you were offered a spot on X Factor, would you guys take it?
I'll tell you what. If we were offered a spot to do one of our songs and the stage was our stage, well, yes, of course, why not? It's exposure to a huge audience. Why not? No, you know, it's not the martyrs here.
Well, it is exposure, and you know, you're right.
As long as we're doing what we're doing, we're not going there to sing karaoke. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. What if you were allowed to do anything you want? It's just that you had to lip sync to one of your tracks.
Lip sync?
Well,
not really a thing.
But look, I think that as long as we're doing what we're doing, well, who we are, we continue to be who we are and not something else, and not, you know, we're not changing for someone else, and we're doing what we're doing, then whatever it is, it's probably fine.
Now, where do you see playing Mars, you know, in the next 5 years?
Where would we like to see it? You know, those bands that we really like, we'd like to find ourselves playing alongside them somewhere. We'd like to find ourselves in people's collections. We like, you know, people who like Sigur Rós or Gullfrapp or Nick Cave or, you know, whatever the, you know, we like to kind of go, okay, well, here's playing Mars is in that box, and you know that respect, I think, is the ultimate goal for any musician.
And what I like about those artists is they're all quite open about the fact that they have quite a journey. They're always evolving. And I think that's something we're definitely, that's what we enjoy about playing together, about being playing Mars, is how we're evolving as artists and musicians. So I think, you know, we're signing up to that journey as well. So
now, if each one of you could pick a song of Playing Mars that could best describe the sound of Playing Mars, which would that be and why?
What would that be for you, Jeff?
Well, for the moment, it's Burning Desire. Definitely. We have lots of songs that we haven't released yet, but that's for the moment. That's, I'd say so.
Which mix, though?
I think that's why we've got two mixes. The Dan Goody mix is basically almost the original. Live. Yeah, we improvised it. Yeah, it is basically the original live. We improvised it one evening.
But we did experiment with it again in the studio and took it somewhere else as well. We're interested in experimenting and we have both sides. We're both live and electronic, you see. Both sides of the coin.
Now, what does Playing Mars have coming up? I mean, where would we be able to find you guys playing live at some point in the near future?
Or? Not yet. We are just at the beginning of releasing this first single, Burning Desire, and we're going to have some films and a promo coming up soon on YouTube and stuff. And then we're going to start, hopefully, get some live radio sessions in the UK. Which will also generate us playing live in other venues. That's the plan.
Dad, do you have any plans on playing mainland Europe or the United States?
Not yet. You know, we'd love to play anywhere that would have us, and would. But it's early days in that sense. We're not quite there yet. But thank you for, you know, it says we'd love to do that, of course.
I think you guys will be there soon. I mean, you have a
good. That's really kind of you.
Well, you have a good sound, and you're off to a great start. And I've only heard the two Burning Desire mixes, but they're good. I mean, they have a signature to them.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. That's really kind of you.
So Angelique, I didn't get your answer about what song you feels defines the band.
For me, definitely, it's Burning Desire as well. I think that was actually my vocal debut with the band. Yeah, it was. I'm actually classically trained, so I trained in opera singing, and it was the first time I'd actually stood in front of a microphone with no lyrics or melody, and just opened my mouth and out it came, and that was it.
So that's it.
It was a very liberating moment.
That's just improvisation, then.
That was improvisation, yes.
Oh wow, nice.
It was Jeff's bass and guitar, and we put some cellos on, and then we just kept going for hours, and then came out at 4 a.m, and we had a track. So I think, just from a personal perspective, that's my favorite track.
But we have completed, over 10 more tracks since then as well.
I think it was the defining track for our signature.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any plans on releasing those other tracks or making a full album?
Yeah. Yes, of course. It's going to be like every probably 2-3 months we will be releasing a new single and an EP, and we will release it also on vinyl and so on, like limited edition stuff. Yes, the answer is yes. And then inevitably there will be an album as well. We have all of the material for the album ready now.
Now, when will we be able to see that, do you think?
Well, the singles and like B-sides and other tracks will come out, and on our website we've got an MP3, and the tracks will be changed, or I will add tracks every 2 to 3 months, with the next single coming in, and probably in 6 months' time we'll be able to be in a position where it's right for us, hopefully, to release the album. We want to create a foundation. We want to work hard now, get stuff on radio in the UK, and then do some live sessions and play live and kind of build up and then release an album.
Nice. Now, where can we find Playing Mars online? I know we talked about the website, playingmars.com, but where else are you? Where else can we hear your music or see your videos?
Well, we're definitely on Facebook, Playing Mars, just on the Facebook search, and that has links to SoundCloud as well. And we regularly update some of our visuals as well, and also videos. And
we will
Twitter,
start having YouTube
Twitter
soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that we're working on a video for Burning Desire. But each one of the songs will have a few videos that will come out on YouTube.
And actually, Facebook is good as well, because we quite like getting the comments, feedback.
Talking to people.
Yeah. So that's always interesting.
What about Twitter? You guys on Twitter?
We are on Twitter, yeah.
Nice.
Again, Playing Mars on Twitter.
It's all new. It's all really new. We don't want to sound like we've done loads. We're working hard at building up the foundations.
But you're doing it the right way.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. I think you guys are going to be really good and have a lot of success.
Thank you very much.
So. Thank you very much.